本家是
All right. Oh, boy, that is me, isn't it? Jeez, this is all different. My name's Chris Laudick, and I'm an alcoholic. Hello. This is really something. I am so excited. I am so happy to be here. This is just unbelievable. I cannot believe we are all here today. And I just can't even begin to tell you the kind of phenomenal day that I have had, but before I get into all of those things, I'd like to start out with some specifics, and that is I would like to thank Dane, and I would like to thank the committee for asking me to do this incredible honor today and stand behind a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an absolutely unbelievable honor. I would like to thank my host, Deb, with all my heart and soul. Yep, right there. She helped me greatly getting over some of the nerves and telling me where I needed to be and doing the things that we need to do. And there is a large group of ladies that I definitely want to thank and give a lot of recognition to and a lot of credit to right now. And these ladies all showed up in my hotel room today when I was one giant bundle of nerves. I've had so many people come up to me and say, "You're the vessel, you're the vessel." Well, the vessel right at this moment is a blender. And it is on high speed because I have never been so overwhelmed with Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. But, so this is really going to tick a lot of them off, but a lot of them I do sponsor. So at this moment, ladies, if you were in my hotel room, will you stand up? Can you give these ladies a round of applause? Yeah! Woo! Thank you. Those girls are the reason I'm behind the podium, because we lovingly called it a pep rally, we called it happy hour, and the whole reality of it was the only way we're going to get her to the Jar Arena is if we don't let her leave our site. So it was, they stayed with me. I didn't even go to the bathroom by myself today. They had somebody with me, so it was just, it's amazing how this thing works, and I'm just so very grateful. And I have a couple other people that I would like to thank for being here, and they're absolutely going to kill me too, so I'm trying to get all this out of the way early. And for the first time ever, I have my son Lee with me, and he's 14 years old, and he's right there, and he's going to kill me. So, and my husband Ron's next to him, and my friend Kimberly and her mom. So they are just really special people to me. This is, like I said, this is Lee's first introduction to Founders Day, so I don't know how much better it gets than this. I'm just really glad everybody's here. But most importantly, to get all those thank yous out of the way, there is one I have left. And that thank you is the absolutely most important thank you that I can bring to you from behind the podium. And that is, I would like to thank the God of my understanding that because of you, I have walked in here with. Because that God, in his infinite wisdom, saw somehow, some way, prior to October 29th, 1994, which is my sobriety date, to save me a seat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're sitting here in this arena today, he saw fit to love you just as much. And how grateful can we be? And let me ask you this question right now. Look around you, and what more can we ask for? Is this amazing or what? I just love AA. Yeah. But there is always a but, because I'm an alcoholic. But as big of an honor as it is to stand behind this podium today, this is absolutely not the most important job I do. And I want you to know that. The most important job that I do for Alcoholics Anonymous is at 3 o'clock in the morning when my phone rings. And there's another suffering alcoholic on the other end of that phone. And I take the time out of my nice, calm, peaceful sleep that I get now, because that's what sobriety does for us. And I answer that phone, and I can talk to that person, and I can get them through whatever it is that they need to go through at 3 a.m. And it's to show up at my home group, which is the Coshocta Monday night meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Coshocta, Ohio. We meet on the corner of 8th and Main at 8 o'clock. It's an open lead speaker meeting. And we would be happy to give you directions. But it is to show up there every single Monday night. Because I have found, as time has gone on, people depend on me being there. And I love it when I hear somebody say, "Chris, I knew you'd be here." Because that means I'm suiting up and I'm showing up and I'm still doing what you told me. And there's a lot of things, though, that are more important than standing behind any podium that appear at first or on the outside that have nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, and yet they have everything to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of those things is that son that I just embarrassed horribly over there. His father just recently moved out of state. And because you have helped me raise him in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you have taught me how to practice these principles in all my affairs and how to take it home with me, when he was really going through some hard times, he looked at me just 2 days ago and said, "Mom, it's really not what I want to do, but it's the next right thing." And you know where he got that. And when they called me a month and a half ago at 3 o'clock in the morning from our local hospital and said, "Chris, we have your dad here, and he's just not doing so well," I was able to get up out of bed at 2 a.m., and I didn't have to worry about getting a DUI. I didn't have to worry about being passed out, and I was able to hold my head high because that's what you taught me to do, and walk into that ER and make sure that my 88-year-old father that has early stages Alzheimer's got the absolute best care he could get, because that's what you guys have taught me to do. That is AA in action. And I am blessed beyond words with a job that I absolutely love. I am a secretary at an elementary school for 350 kids. And I have a young lady at my school. And it's a very tragic case. And AA shows up at that school with me every single day. And because of you, I'm in a room full of, or in a building full of 40-some staff members, and this young lady's talking about the monsters in her head. You had taught me to suit up and show up no matter where it was that I happened to be at the time. I knew enough to look at that little 10-year-old girl and ask her, "What are the monsters saying, honey? We can talk about it." And I shared that story with one of you in this room, and you sent to my school, you sent a little tiny, tiny man with a sword and a shield to me, and you said, "Here, please give that to that little girl and tell her that that will protect her." And to this day, she carries that little man with that sword and that shield in her pocket to keep those monsters away. So please, if you don't hear anything else today that I have to say, know that practicing these principles in all our affairs is one of the most important things we can do. Even if it doesn't seem like we're doing AA, we are doing AA. And it is such a gift. Our book tells us to tell everyone what we were like, what happened, and what we're like today. But there is another line in that book that I absolutely cherish. And it says that each man, in his own words and from his own point of view, tells how he developed his relationship with God. And that is what I hope to bring to you today, is how I developed my relationship with God. Because to me, that is the number one important thing. Because I was absolutely powerless when I came in here. Long before I ever discovered alcohol, I had that Bill W. personality. My personality was absolutely doing me in long before I ever discovered alcohol. From the earliest time that I could remember, there was a whole lot of chatter going on in this head, and there still is, especially right now. But that chatter in my head, it always told me, "You're not enough," or "You're too much." And I could feel everything. And I could walk into a room like this, and I swear to you, I could feel what you were thinking about me. I was so good at it. You know, I could read your mind. I was just sure I knew everything that you were thinking about me. And what you were thinking about me was never nice. But even if what you were thinking about me was halfway nice, that was okay. I could end that in a heartbeat, because my own thoughts about myself were absolutely vicious. And what I would do was I was just completely surrounded in this fortress of these thorns of inadequacy, and no matter which way I turned and no matter which way I tried to move to fit in and to be like you, they absolutely pierced my soul. So I walked around in this state of sheer agony all the time. But at 14, all that changed. Because at 14, I had my first experience with unlimited alcohol consumption. And it's important that I tell you unlimited alcohol consumption, because I had had some experiences with alcohol prior to that. I had had maybe one or two drinks or whatever. And what those one or two drinks did to me, they made me restless, irritable, and discontent. I had no idea that that was an absolute sign and symptom of the disease that was headed down the pike for me. I thought that's just what happened if you had a drink. But at 14, what I found out was with unlimited alcohol in my system, everything changed. Because that unlimited alcohol did for me what I had always been wanting to do, and it changed my perception of me. Suddenly, my not enough was just enough. My too much was just enough. I could care less what you were thinking about me, and those thorns were completely gone. And that night, I jumped on board just like I always did for the next 20 years. I jumped on board the express train to Vomitville, because that is what I did. If you didn't drink enough to throw up, you hadn't drank enough. And I found out on my job, like I said, I work with a bunch of teachers, and we were all eating lunch one day, and I found out that social drinkers don't look at it that way. I was sitting there talking with them, and we were talking about drinking, and they were talking about throwing up, and somebody was saying, oh, man, yeah, that's when I quit. And I thought, and, you know, I thought out loud. I still tend to do that once in a while. And I said, no, if you throw up, it just means you can drink more. And they all eight of them looked at me and went, oh. And I thought, you know, only in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous would people understand that. And I realized, okay, we're not in a meeting, Chris. Refocus. We're not in a meeting, you know. Go back to what you're doing. But what I did after the night of that first unlimited alcohol, I went on a 20-year pilgrimage to recapture the bliss that I felt that night. And I never did recapture that bliss until I came into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I found here far exceeded any bliss that I had felt that night. But I did go on a 20-year pilgrimage to find that bliss again. Because it, like I said, it did for me. It changed my complete perception of me. And so what happens when you're feeling that way is you don't have a problem with alcohol. At least I didn't have a problem with alcohol. There were a lot of other people around me that had a problem with my alcohol consumption, but I certainly never had a problem with my alcohol consumption. The only problem that I ever had with alcohol is that it wore off. Because when alcohol wore off, then I had to feel again. And as I just told you, I drank not only to dull the pain, but I drank to dull the ecstasy. But I couldn't let you know that. I could not let you know that my soul was pierced and that I was absolutely dying inside, but I didn't have alcohol inside of me. So what I did was I walked around with a big old smile on my face all the time. And what everybody thought that I was happy and that I was just happy to be alive and that I was well balanced and all of these wonderful things, and all I was a neurotic nut behind a happy mask is all it amounted to. Because nothing that you saw on the outside of me was real. It was all for show, and it was all just so that you would like me. And so all the while, all of these things are going on just crazy, crazy in my head, and they're spinning, and they're spinning, and they're spinning. And I've shared this story with so many of the girls that I sponsor, and that was that when my son, several years ago, he got a wonderful gift. It was a gift of a hamster from his grandfather. And I decided a few days ago, I got to thinking about that hamster. And I thought, if AA had a mascot, it would be a hamster. Because when I learned so much from that hamster when he had it. Because as soon as things would get quiet and as soon as things would calm down, that hamster jumps right on that wheel. And what do? They start running. And they're running, and they're running, and they're running, and they're running, and they're running. And then they run some more, and then they run some more, you know. And the darker it gets, the faster they run. And that was exactly how my alcoholic mind worked. And I thought, there are so many of us like that. As soon as things get quiet, that's exactly what happens to our head and exactly what happens to our mind. And so I have now appointed the hamster the official mascot of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we can all get little hamsters on buttons now. But all the while all of that was going on in my head, I knew there was one solution for all of that trouble. And that solution for me was alcohol. And that was the only way that I found to calm all of those distorted thoughts, all the distorted perception of reality. I began to use alcohol as my anesthesia. And what happens, though, when you begin to use alcohol as an anesthesia, a lot of things start happening, and they start happening very quickly. Because as I started using it as anesthesia, I never knew how or where I would wake up. You know, things like that started happening. And I was one of those, and if there was anybody sitting in on the conversation in my hotel room, they can attest to this. I was one of those rip-roaring, screaming, hit them a hollering, party till your pants fall off kind of female drunks. That was just who I was. And that was the way I lived my life. And there is a part in our book that talks about women are often gone beyond recognition in a very short time. And I truly believe there's a reason for that, because a lot of the women that I've sponsored, and I know it holds true for myself, I can't speak for any of the other women in this room, is that we often use sex for communication and acceptance. There are a lot of times that we do that, and I have shared with a lot of people that, you know, I found out early on in my drinking that I had what you wanted, and you were willing to go to any lengths to get it. So I just, you know, that was how I got what I wanted. I never once quit drinking because I was out of money, because I could somehow get you to buy me a drink. I never once quit drinking because I was out of alcohol, because I could get you to buy me a drink. The only reason that I ever remember quitting drinking is because I was out of consciousness. That was the only time I stopped. But I also found, through all of my manipulation and everything like that, that not only could alcohol change my perception of me, but you could change my perception of me. Because if I had the right person on my arm or showed up with the right person somewhere, then I could feel better about me. And so by the time I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had become a serial marrier. I was married and divorced 3 times when I walked in here at 33 years old. And my final marriage, I thought I had hit the lottery. He was a very nice man. And he did love me incredibly. I know that today. And he had money, which made it even better. You know, I started marrying up the food chain. It was pretty neat. It was, you know, I started getting a little bit better at it. But the only problem was that I didn't realize at that time I was dying from untreated alcoholism. I thought I drank a little too much. I had no idea what was really wrong with me. And I would go with him to these nifty little business cocktail parties that he would have to go to. And I would show up just like I did today. I'd clean up on the outside. I'd suit up. I'd dress up. I would put my best, you know, face forward. And I would stand in those little cocktail parties with those stupid little plastic cups that they give you that are not near big enough. And I can't tell you how many of those I crushed. You know, you're standing there going, oh, isn't this nice? Oh, you know, because I could not drink with any social setting at the rate that this alcoholic needed to drink to have that sense of ease and comfort, because that is why I drank. I drank for that sense of ease and comfort, and I could not do it there. What I had no idea, like I said, that I was absolutely dying at that point of untreated alcoholism. I had no concept of that. I had absolutely no concept that no longer in my life was I going to be able to live at peace with anyone or anything without the aid of alcohol. And I had no idea that I had reached a point in my alcoholism where I no longer could put on that fake smile for you and show up and be who I thought you wanted me to be. I was in too much pain. I had no idea that when I kept trying to put that drink down in that marriage, that it was those thorns that were back that were literally piercing my soul. I was an absolute contradiction. The outside of me still looked fine. The outside of me was still looking okay and showing up. And the inside of me was absolutely shredded to pieces from those thorns of inadequacy that so many of us feel from the disease of alcoholism. And as I said, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I had no concept. And I kept thinking, there's something out there. There is something out there that is going to make me happy. There's something out there that is going to fill my heart and fill my soul, and I will be happy, and I'll walk around and be happy. And I was sure what that something was. There was only one thing left in life that I didn't have at that point in time. Because, see, I had the husband that loved me. I had the beautiful house in the country. I had all the things that money could buy, the brand new Camaro in the driveway. I had, you know, all the toys, the motorcycles. We had all this stuff. There was one thing that I was sure that was missing, and that one thing was a child. Because I had wanted a child my entire life, more than anything in the whole world. I was certain that through being a mom, I was going to undo all the wrongs that I felt that had been done to me, and that I would be super mom, you know, and I would do everything right. And I have to tell you right now, and I know that I share this feeling with a lot of women in Alcoholics Anonymous, that the shoulders of a baby are entirely too tiny to carry the disease of alcoholism on. They cannot do that. And yet we put them in that position day after day after day. Obviously, it didn't work. And within a very short time, I found myself in the lockdown unit of Bethesda Psychiatric Hospital under a suicide watch, and I was deemed a threat to myself and society. And, you know, a lot of us in here have the papers to prove that, don't we? We're just all, oh, guys, you know, card-carrying crazy. I love it, and I think that's why I fit in here. But as I said, I had married money, and money talks, so they let me out. And that was probably the biggest disservice that was ever done to me. But, you know, they were treating what I was taught not too long ago by some friends of mine. They were treating the 10% that they could see. And what was killing me was that 90% that I wouldn't let them see. So I don't blame the doctors and I don't blame the hospitals. They did the absolute best that they could to help me. And what happened was I got out of that psychiatric unit. They sent me home with a pretty nifty psychiatric diagnosis. I thought all was well because I thought, I'm just crazy. That's all that's wrong with me. I'm okay. That wasn't all that was wrong with me. And suicide became an option every single day. And needless to say, this crazed woman did not fit into those little cocktail parties anymore. This crazed woman did not fit into that perfect little, you know, house in the country and little two-car garage and the little child and all of the wonderful things. So it wasn't too long until that man left. And as that man pulled away in his pickup truck, I watched my son, with tears streaming down his face, watch his father leave. And that very same night, even though I loved him so much I wouldn't do anything to hurt him, he watched his mother climb right back into the bottle. And I hear a lot of people say, I picked up where I left off. I didn't. I picked up light years past where I had left off. When I picked back up at some point in time, all choice, all decision, all power had been removed from me. What I didn't understand was that man that I was married to had become my power. Because if you're an alcoholic like I'm an alcoholic, you're powerless, and you have to find some kind of power, and you are going to plug into that power, and you are going to write it for all it's worth. And that is exactly what I had done. And when that man pulled out of that driveway, I lost all power. And if you're an alcoholic like I am, you only have one choice when you find yourself completely powerless again, and that is to pick up the drink. And that is exactly what I did. And as I said, I climbed right back into that bottle. And what happened, there were so many things that happened. There were so many, you know, we just can go down so unbelievably fast. I don't have to tell you about all of that because if you're sitting in here in a meeting, you've probably gone right down that roller coaster with me. You know exactly what I'm talking about. But there are just a few things that did get me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of those is a story of a night. And like I said, I loved that little boy and I wanted him more than anything in the world. But the night came when Mom had been drinking all day and I just had been drinking for days and hadn't stopped. And I had been drinking since early morning and, you know, had to go for that beer run at noon and came back and drank all night. And so by that time, that evening, I put that little boy to bed up in his little room in this 100-year-old house that we had. And it was like a story and a half, so both rooms were adjacent to each other, kind of open. And that little boy the following day came to me and told me a story which forever changed my life. And the story that he told me was that he had laid in his bed that night at 3 years old and had pulled the covers over his head and had laid and had cried and had shook for he doesn't know how long, because his mother was hallucinating. Of course, he didn't know that word. That's my word. But he said his mommy was seeing things. And I was yelling and screaming for the devil to get out of my bedroom. And he was just sure that his mommy was sending the devil in to get him. So if you think you aren't affecting anyone else in your life, if you ever have that misgiving again, please, if you don't hear anything else I say today, remember that story. Because of you, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and most importantly, because of the grace of God, that young man sitting here today can't remember that story at all. Only when he hears his mom talk about it, that is what you have done for me. So I ask you again, what more can we ask for when the power of Alcoholics Anonymous can erase a nightmare from a child's mind? This is just a phenomenal thing. I would love to say that that was the bottom, but it wasn't. But it definitely was the catalyst for the bottom. My bottom came not too long after that, and I am so absolutely grateful that it did, because I don't know if I would be alive today if it had taken much longer. But there was a man in my community, and I live in a very small community. I mean, there are 12,000 people. There will be more people here this weekend than in the community that I live in. And there was a man that recognized exactly what was happening to me, and what I didn't know was that he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what he saw happening to me, he saw that I was physically sick and that I was mentally ill, but most importantly, that I was spiritually starved. Because, see, we can see in each other what is wrong. We can look at another suffering alcoholic and know it, and they don't even have to tell us. They don't even have to say one word. And he knew that, and he gave me a business card, and on the back of it was the number for the crisis hotline. Couldn't figure out why I needed that. I was doing fine, right? Yeah, my life was going good. And he gave me a business card, and it had the crisis hotline on the back. But you know what? When the day came that I finally hit my bottom and I thought I had left that son at a beer wine stop on the other side of town, and, you know, I went in the bathroom and with my beer and realized that all of a sudden that I didn't think I had the child that I had left about 15 minutes ago with. And so I went running through my living room, knocking things over, cussing and carrying on like a good alcoholic mother does. And by the grace of God, he was sitting in the living room. And he looked up at me with the calmness of a child who's being parented by an alcoholic, a child who has learned to accept the unacceptable, and that's normal. And he just looked at me and goes, "What's wrong, Mom?" And it was what I saw right then, the fact that nothing was wrong, that made me hit my bottom. That bottom may not sound dramatic. You may have been waiting for something really wow, but that was my bottom. And I have to be honest from behind this podium. That was my bottom. And I turned around and I realized what was happening. And so when I talk to new girls that come into AA, I tell them, I don't care what brought you in here. Because I did not come in here for me. I had long since quit caring about me. I didn't care whether I lived or died. But I did have a shred of decency left in me enough to care about that little boy that was sitting there playing with his Hot Wheels in the living room. And I walked out into my kitchen and I picked up the phone. You know that 30,000 pound phone that you have? Yeah, it's that one. Takes both hands and a crane to get it off the hook and you just, and I called Jerry Day, who now lives in Florida. He lived in a town adjacent to mine at the time. And I called him and I said, I don't know what the heck's going on. I don't know what's wrong with me. And he said, that's okay, I do. And he talked to me and he did exactly what you guys teach us to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. He got people together for me. They 12-stepped me like they talk about in that book. You know, it was just like the way it's always supposed to be. And the next night he introduced me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked into my first meeting and this tiny little lady reached out her hand to me and she's like about my height and she had these like scarlet red hands. I know a lot of you in the room that I saw that I know, you know her, Mary Kay M. from Coshocton. And she stuck this bony little hand out at me and she said, hi, I'm Mary Kay and I'm gonna be your sponsor. I didn't know that wasn't really how you did that here. So being the people pleaser that I'd love to say was, but I still jump over that fence once in a while. So I said, okay, you know, and it's like, all right, whatever you say. And I am so grateful today that she did that for me. Because you know what? More important in my life, I wanted you to like me. So I never, ever would have walked in there and done something like that. And she made me fit in like that. From my very first meeting by walking up to me and taking my hand. So the girls that I sponsor and the other women that are just friends of mine, they know that oftentimes in Coshocton, Ohio, you will see me carrying the message by sticking my hand out in a meeting of AA and saying, hi, I'm Chris Laudick and I'll be your sponsor. Because I know that there are other women that walk into that room and feel exactly like I did. I would love to say that, boy, it was from that moment and it was all sunlight and roses and I've been happy and grateful ever since, but that would be the biggest lie in the world. Because what I did, at 2 weeks sober, I was one of those alcoholics that would walk into a meeting and you'd go, how you doing, Chris? You know, with that sincere, serious look on your face, and I'd go, I'm fine, sobriety's great, how are you? And I'm dying inside. But it's so important for you to like me, I'm not going to tell you that. And that is where the old-timers come into play, and they're the ones that I would love. I take no credit for standing behind this podium today, absolutely none. I want to give the credit to where the credit is due. It's to those people that trudged this path for the last 70 years, so that I could be standing up here tonight instead of in an asylum or dead. And I gotta thank those old timers because they were a bunch of gruff, nasty old men. God. The town that I come from, I mean, my sponsor, that little old lady was the only woman. It was all men. It's still a lot that way. Let me tell you, if I didn't practically drag them in off the street, it'd still be that way. But there were all these little men, you know, with their crooked little fingers, and they'd point at me, you know. But you know what? Those little men, they loved me enough to tell me the truth about the games that I was playing with myself and with others. And they loved me enough to not give me a watered-down version of AA. They loved me. They loved me in a way that they could care less about my feelings and care everything about my life. And I am so grateful to them. But the most important thing that they did for me, they loved me enough to not be afraid to share with me the God of their understanding. They loved me enough to plant the seed inside of me, the same seed that was planted some 70 years ago today, right here in Akron, Ohio. And I ask you right now to never underestimate the power of a seed. because look around this room at the beautiful garden God has given us. You guys are beautiful. I'm telling you, if you can see it from here, the color is phenomenal. Oh, those guys, like I said, I will be forever grateful. But there was one problem with this beautiful, beautiful story. I was walking around in a constant state of fear because I was professing a faith that I didn't have. I was lying to you the whole time. And what happens when you do that is life starts happening. I wasn't intentionally lying to you. I didn't know how to do it any different. And so what happened was I was walking around Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started working the steps with that beautiful sponsor that had been appointed to me. And I worked steps 1 through 5, and then I stopped. Because why do I need to go on? You know, I'm professing this faith that I don't have. So what point would there be in doing steps 6 and 7? What can I turn something over to? If there is no power greater than myself, I didn't even know at that point in time if I even had a willingness yet to turn it over to something. I was still completely driven on self-sufficiency. I still thought I could do this. And so what happens when you pull out those old thoughts and those old ideas and you don't replace them with new thoughts and new ideas? Weeds start sprouting up in that garden of your sobriety. And let me tell you, the weeds come back, and they come back with a vengeance, and then life starts happening, and that's exactly what happened to me, was life started happening, and my mother died as a direct result of the disease of alcoholism. And I was 4 years sober when this happened. And guess what? I had not gone on with my steps, so I can guarantee you we buried her with some undone amends. And that's one of those things that you start carrying around with you, and the weight gets a little bit heavier. I had no idea that the greatest gift my alcoholic mother would ever give me would be through dying from the disease of alcoholism. Because if nothing else, when I walked in and I saw her, it taught me to take this thing serious. And because I truly believe it's because I had not worked my steps and there were too many undone amends and I was standing on shifting sand instead of that solid rock that they promise us in our book, my life started unraveling at a really rapid pace. And I developed a pretty powerful form of chronic mono that summer and got very, very sick. Well, I hadn't built my support system either, so I found myself suddenly alone again. And so I laid on that couch, and one of my girls is here from Tennessee today, and God love her, I was sponsoring people at this time, and that's how scary it can get, you know? And Shelly's here with us today, and she was the only one that would not allow me to fire her. I don't know if it's because she was that sick or what she had going on, but I will forever be grateful to Shelly for that, because she pretty much took over at that time, and she kept me in that book, and she was the meeting that I couldn't get to when she would call, and she helped me more than she will ever know. But what eventually happened was I had an absolute meltdown at 4 years in AA. And I will tell you what, hitting bottom is a highly underrated spiritual experience when you've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for a while. And hit bottom I did. And there is a line, I believe it's in our 12 and 12, I'm not sure, I'm not a real big book quoter, but it talks about pain is the touchstone of all spiritual growth. And I am a firm believer in that now, because I had reached a point of what I thought was intolerable pain. And I found myself laying on the floor in my bedroom in that same house that I had sent devil heads to my son in. And I was laying in a purple robe, and I was shaking, and I was crying, and I was covered in my own sweat. And I had been doing this deal for 4 years, and I had never felt such desperation in my life. And I had an absolute beautiful moment of clarity. And that moment of clarity was that for the first time ever, with that type of desperation and pain in my soul, I was not reaching for a drink. And just in that 1 second did I feel a single ray of that sunlight of the Spirit shine down upon me. And I thought for the very first time, maybe, just maybe, there is a power that's greater than me. Because the obsession to drink I knew in that instant had been removed. What I didn't know was that the spiritual malady hadn't. Right in that moment, I knew that one of the symptoms of my disease, the alcohol consumption, had been removed. What I didn't know was that the illness of alcoholism was still alive and well in me. And at 4 years in AA, I was dying from untreated alcoholism. And that is why it is so important that we stay so active. And right at that moment, my phone rang. And, you know, it's one of those God shots, as my sponsor says. And it was Jerry Day, the man who had given me his business card, on the other end of the phone. And he said, "How you doing, Chris?" And what was my first thought? You guys know what my first thought was. My first thought was to say, "I'm fine." You know, and I'm laying there, like I said, covered in my own sweat, shaking. And I'm going to go, "I'm fine." And for the first time ever, a thought crossed my mind from a book that I had read years and years before. It was from Dante's Inferno, and it said, "The hottest place in hell is reserved for those who in times of crisis choose to remain on the fence." And I knew I had a decision to make in that very instant, and that my very life depended on it. And I said, "Jerry, I'm not good at all. I feel like I'm dying." And he said, "Yeah, I know you are, babe. There's going to be somebody there in 20 minutes to pick you up." So I don't know who ratted me out, but whoever you were, thank you, because you saved my life. Somebody saw what was happening to me and saved my life. And please don't ever hesitate, you know, to make those calls to people when you think they're hurting, even if they're acting like they don't want to talk to you. Because you can ask Shelley that was with me at that time. I tried to shut myself off from everybody. Pick up that phone and make those calls to people. Don't wait for them to call you just because you know they're hurting. It may be too late. They may die. And so somebody did come and picked me up, and we went to a women's meeting, which was the first thing that made me mad, because I still didn't like you women. I didn't trust you women. The last thing I wanted to do was be in a room full of you women. And now I find myself in a hotel room that is so full today. We're all, it's like we're perched like a bunch of birds all over this room. It was great. But so they took me to this women's discussion meeting, and I shared openly and I shared honestly for the first time. And I truly believe that there are so many people that are put in our life for absolute maximum growth at just the right time by the God of our understanding. And there was a very calm, quiet lady that I met there today. We could not be more opposites. Because, you know, I'm just like a tornado, man. I just am. What do you guys call me? Loud, obnoxious? And I'm trying to think of what else. Yeah, short, loud, and obnoxious. But, and this lady was so quiet and so calm, but what she did for me that day was she gave me hope. She gave me a sense of peace that I had been looking for all my life. But she told me that the key to me getting better wasn't just about hope, but it was about honesty. And for the first time, somebody looked at me and said, "But honey, I know you can't be completely honest. You're not there yet. Just do the best you can." And I went home and I picked up that 30,000 pound phone. Suddenly it was 15,000 pounds because you guys had given me some hope. She had carried part of that burden for me. And I called that little old lady with those short hands and I said, "Mary Kay." And what you have to understand, she was the organist at the Catholic Church. She's like really, you know, I figured that was like a mainline to God or something. I don't know. But I called her and I'm like, "I don't even know if I'm willing to believe in God. Yeah. Something happened to me on the floor of my bedroom. I don't know what it was, but I really think I'm finally willing. I've been lying to you, but this is the truth now. I swear this is the truth now." And she said in her little voice, she said, "Well, honey, then I want you to turn to page 44 in your book and read We Agnostics again." And I went, "Again?" Because, you know what, I didn't know what that word meant, so I don't think I ever read it. I think I kind of skipped over that chapter because if I didn't know what the word meant, couldn't pertain to me, could not be a big deal. So that's exactly what I did. And it was amazing because I found my very first answer on page 44. Because, see, like I said, I had white-knuckled it for a while. I had intermittent periods of not drinking when I was married to my third husband. And I thought maybe, just maybe, that was my get-out-of-jail-free card. That would let me off the hook. Because I always thought that it said that you can't stop drinking, even when you want to, and once you start drinking, you can't control your consumption. That isn't what it says at all. And once I began studying that book, I found that out. The word in there is or. Suddenly, I fit right on that page. Because, yeah, I did stop, temporary as it was, but I did stop. But never once was I able to control my consumption of alcohol. And then, on the very next page, it told me that you guys had a solution that would solve all of my problems. Not make me a little bit better, not make me a little bit happier, not get me a husband back, not do this, but it would solve all of my problems. And here I finally had another moment of clarity where I saw the answer had been right there in front of me all along. And very shortly after that, Mary Kay became very, very ill, and she was unable to sponsor anymore. And so I took off and took an AA vacation over in Columbus. I spent a week over there and came back armed with just enough information to be dangerous, grabbed three other girls that were in the fellowship at the time in Coshocton and said, we have got to figure this out, ladies. We've got to bring AA to the women around here. We've got to do something. And we sat down, and I think it was for 21 weeks, we studied the first 164 pages of our book. And we worked the steps together, the four of us. We had absolutely no guidance other than divine intervention. So let me tell you, it is with all the joy in my heart, all of the grace of God, and all of the excitement that I hope that you feel at this 70th Founders Day to tell you that all four of us are still sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that, my friends, is God doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. Because we trudged that road, didn't we? We had no idea what we were doing. Heck, we almost had a street fight out in front of my house once because two of us disagreed on a point. You know, I mean, it was just, we had no idea what we were doing. But somehow, it got us through. And once we were done with that step study, I knew that I could no longer stay sober on my own. But I was unable to do it by myself. And so I went back to that meeting where that quiet, quiet woman was, and I walked into that meeting, and with all the courage that I could pray for, I said to her, I said, is there any way that you would be my sponsor? And I know you guys will be surprised by this, that she stuck out her hand and said, I'd be happy to do that. I've been waiting for you. Here, all those years that I thought where I would be rejected, and I was so welcome with open arms. And all that I can tell you is that the last 5 years of my sobriety, I have found what the big book calls much of heaven. So many amazing things have happened to me. But the first thing, the first and foremost and most important thing that I had to learn was that I had to surrender to this way of living. It had nothing to do with just surrendering to this or surrendering to that. I had to surrender to a complete way of living. And oftentimes when I sponsor, and the girls that I sponsor, they will say to me, they will say, well, yeah, how do I surrender? That is still the number one question that I hear. How do I surrender? And my only answer to you is, I can't, but we can. I'm powerless, but we're not. Together, after you make that decision, we can walk through steps 4 through 9. And we will give you the power that you're going to need to go on to do 10, 11, and 12 to maintain that kind of joy in your life. I had to finally accept the fact that each day when I woke up, the planets were revolving around the sun without any help from me, that seeds were growing into flowers without any help from me, and that embryos, even embryos, were turning into babies all by themselves without any help from me. I had to make that decision to surrender to the maker of the sunsets or keep doing it by myself. And what I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous, that surrendering to the maker of the sunset, it is the easier, softer way. It is so much easier. I always lived. I lived my whole life with that whole grab the bull by the horns theory. I want to thank all of you for explaining to me what a stupid idea that is. Have you ever thought about that? Yeah, grab the bull by the horns. What is going to happen to you? You're going to get impaled. I don't know about you, but I'm choosing to let go today. And because of your teachings, you taught me how to start applying all 12 of these steps and all of these principles into each and every day of my life. You started teaching me how to take them with me everywhere I went. And because of that, I am so grateful to be able to stand back here tonight and tell you that I had a spiritual experience that was the kind that Bill W. talks about in our big book. It was amazing what happened to me once I truly started using this as a way of life and applying this to my whole life. But through divine intervention in that book, they also told us what can happen to a lot of us. And following that spiritual experience was absolute spiritual intoxication. My feet did not touch ground for a long time. And what happened after that, because of God's infinite wisdom and knowing the person that I am inside, it was that spiritual intoxication was followed by absolute desperation. I found myself one more time down in that pit. And I have to tell you, I could look at it though finally and see that it wasn't a punishment. That was God doing for me again what I couldn't or wouldn't do for myself. Because see, I would have stopped there and I would have settled for less than what I have today if I had not felt that desperation again. And what happened is what has happened to me a dozen times in Alcoholics Anonymous. Someone was put in my life that started ambushing me with information about Alcoholics Anonymous, about the whole life outside of my meetings in Coshocton, Ohio, even outside of my meetings, you know, in Columbus or Akron or New Philly or any of the places that I would go to. They started ambushing me with information about workshops and conferences, and I started getting really, really active. And it was absolutely amazing the changes that started happening in my life. Because at those workshops and at those conferences, I started finding people that were just like me, that in sobriety had hit absolute desperation and wanted more. And that's the whole idea of emotional sobriety. I started finding out what that was all about and got very active. And within a very short time, met some of the absolute spiritual giants in Alcoholics Anonymous that absolutely changed my life. I used to challenge God, if you just show up and stand in front of me, I will believe in you. If you give me that burning bush, I will believe in you. If you do this, if you do that, you know, I had my whole list. And what was going to happen to me, I had no idea happened. God showed up all right to me. He showed up, though, in the eyes of a 7-foot-tall bald man. Not what I expected to see at all. And as that man held his hands in mine and prayed with me, and I looked at him and I said, I see God in your eyes. I see him. I finally see him. And he said to me, no, sweetheart. All you see in my eyes is a reflection of what already dwells in you. God lives in you. Now, you had told me that. And the beautiful part about that is I can take that with me every single day. And when I look each and every one of you in the eyes, I can see God now. Because I know that God, too, dwells in you. And it is such a beautiful thing. Finally, I came to believe that I had to stay active. And I had found another sponsor through several of these workshops that I had been doing, and she bangs the drum that you cannot stay sober today on what you did yesterday. And so my feet are constantly moving. I have not slowed down. It has been like I have been on the fast track to sobriety since a lot of this stuff happened. But what I have found is that growth can often be painful. It hasn't all been easy since all of these things started happening to me. You know, it's been kind of messy even at times. But that spiritual toolkit that you guys put at my feet 10 years ago, now that I finally opened it up, I found out there is a tool to fit every single weed that's going to pop up in me every single day. And if I just continue to take that daily inventory and keep this garden of my sobriety weeded and keep it clean, it's not that hard anymore. I just have to show up and stick with it every single day. Now, and growth, like I said, I make some mistakes every single night. I will fill out that balance sheet, what I've done that day, and I make some mistakes. I guess I need to rephrase that because somebody that I love very much in Alcoholics Anonymous taught me there are no mistakes, there's only lessons to be learned. So every night when I look down that balance sheet now, I don't look at myself as a faulty human being. I look at myself as a human being that has had to learn some lessons today, and it's very beautiful. And like I said, growth can be messy and it can be painful, but growth can also be beautiful. When I walked into you in Alcoholics Anonymous 10 years ago, I had no idea how to pray. So you told me there were a bunch of prayers in that book and just to memorize them until I could feel them. And you know what? One of my favorite parts of my day now is prayer. And something that I have found that is just beautiful beyond words is you may refuse my suggestions, you may reject my love, but you are absolutely defenseless against my prayers. And that, for me, has been a huge change. I pray for all of you every day, so don't look me in the eyes, because those are the people I tend to pray for a lot, too, as they look me in the eyes. So if you don't want to change, if you're happy and staying the way you are, don't be looking me in the eyes, because I'll be praying for you, and you're defenseless. And it's probably some power thing. I know somebody will tell me it's a control issue, but I don't care. You know, it's all about prayer now. But there was another part to all of that, and you told me I didn't need just to pray, but I needed to try and meditate. And I am so glad that the spiritual realm in Alcoholics Anonymous is broad, roomy, and all-inclusive. Because where I found the God of my understanding was out in the woods. That is where finally things could get quiet enough and that hamster would stop running long enough that I learned that what God says to me is so much more important than what I can ever say to God. That is where I finally learned to be quiet. And that lesson is something that has taught my sponsees about the second step and about there being a power greater. Because I've had a couple of them make the comment, if there is a power great enough to make you shut up, there is a power great enough to keep us from drinking. So that works. You know, and it is absolutely beautiful. I go out in the woods every single day. And I talk to God, and I am so grateful for what has happened. The woods are my cathedral. And it may sound that, you know, my life has just, like I said, been beautiful even since then, but that's not always the case. A lot of beautiful things have happened, and we have to carry this message to another suffering alcoholic. And sometimes that's really difficult. But my favorite way of carrying the message is not from behind the podium. It's working one-on-one with another alcoholic. One of the best things about being a sponsor is that they're watching you. So you got to show up and you got to do AA. And that happened just 2 months ago, I think it was. I snatched Teresa, one of my sponsees, and we went on a 12-step call. And just a few blocks from my house, slam, this deer hit the front of my car. It came out of absolutely nowhere. Now, if she wasn't there, what would I have done? I would have thrown a fit, stomped my feet, and cussed and carried on. But because she was there and I knew she was watching, I kept my calm. We made the phone call to the sheriff's department. Now, I'm not a saint, let me tell you. I did send her out onto the highway to see if we were leaking fluid. I wasn't going out there, but I did send her out. And she was down on that highway, I'll never forget it as long as I live, sticking her finger in. We didn't know whether it was antifreeze water or deer guts, but she did it. They will do those things for you. But, and then I get to watch my sponsees too, and that's amazing. It's to watch them absolutely flourish and grow. It is a phenomenal thing that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have watched that happen with so many of them. There isn't a better moment in the life of a sponsor than when one of your sponsees sticks out their hand to another suffering alcoholic. I just watched my friend Laura do it recently and tell another suffering alcoholic, "Hi, my name's Laura and I can help you." There is absolutely nothing more beautiful. And our book tells us we have to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I can tell you that there is a reason in our 12 and 12 it uses the phrase deranged family life. That is the last place a lot of times this stuff takes hold. But that young man who I sent devil heads into his bedroom not too long ago, he was asked to describe his mother in four phrases. And he said, "She's nice to everybody. She loves nature. She's a little bit goofy." Now he says that should be changed to a lot. But he said she's a little bit goofy and she's totally spiritual. I had sent the devils into his room less than 10 years ago. What more can we ask for when you can change a child's mind to that extent? This works in every area of our life. And I've been blessed with so many things, but sobriety has not been without its trials. I was known as the Black Widow sponsor in my area for a while because we had some really rough goings, and three of my sponsees died within a six-month period. Because of you, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the grace of God, two of the three died as sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can't be grateful enough to you for that. The house that I told you about that my son and I lived in, it burned to the ground, and with it went all of the equity in my home. We had a contractor that stole thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars from us. But what I can tell you that you have taught me, as I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that recovery doesn't make me less sad, but it makes me less hopeless. And it is just not my job to abort the process. What my job is to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. My job is to plant the seed, just as was done 70 years ago, right here in Akron, in Alcoholics Anonymous, or to create Alcoholics Anonymous. And my hope beyond hope, is that for you too, that you find out that the fellowship and the steps are what will water that seed, and that your roots will go down deep into the soil of God's marvelous love, and that the wind will scatter seeds of grace on the garden of your sobriety, and that you will forever walk in the sunlight of the Spirit. My final prayer for you, and remember, it's a prayer, so plug your ears if you don't want to change, because you are defenseless against prayer. My final prayer for you is when you leave this meeting today, or you leave this meeting this afternoon, or you leave the meeting Sunday morning, whenever it is that you have to walk away from the beautiful gift of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that you only have the same question weighing on your heart and in your mind and on your soul as I have in this very moment. And that question is, what more can we ask for? I love you.
What a gift.